Hey, everybody. I'm on the road. Per usual, August 9th and 10th, I will be at the San Jose Improv. So come on out if you're south of San Francisco. Come and hang out in San Jose at the Improv August 9th and 10th. And then August 22nd through the 24th, I'm going to be in Buffalo at the Helium Comedy Club. I love Buffalo Helium. I've gone there for years. Let's pack it out. And then Comedy Zone, Charlotte, North Carolina. That is the 29th of August through the 31st. Those are going to be some fun shows. So come check me out in Charlotte at the Comedy Zone. Buffalo, Charlotte, San Jose, what a run. DanSoder.com for tickets. You're a KC guy. You're like a KC guy.
Yeah.
And I'm a Niners fan.
Sorry about
and
that.
And you are. You guys got us. I went to both Super Bowls.
Oh, you did?
I went to both losses. It is. Well, you got to be loving it because KC always was like a perennial. People that don't like sports, we're recording. Don't like sports, you can skip the first 20 minutes because Chris and I are going to go deep on this.
Yeah.
Because I should hate you as a sports fan more than I do.
Yeah.
As a football fan, you guys are done. I don't want to see the Chiefs do anything again for a while.
That's fine.
The Royals, the Giants beat you guys in 2014.
Yep.
And then you guys pop back up and got a title the next year.
Yes.
So you guys aren't annoying in baseball.
We're not. We're like the cousin that shows up every 10 years.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, I love you.
Yeah, what the you're fuck great. You been?
And you're you'll like, be like, oh, we'll see you next year. And then they're like, probably not.
We got some dark times.
Got some dark times. We don't have a lot of money.
Did you start doing comedy in KC?
Oh, yeah.
At Stanford and Sons?
At Stanford and Sons.
With the Glazers.
With the Glazers in Westport, the original one.
Not because I've only worked that club once. And I know we say we don't talk about comedy a lot, but if you know anything about Kansas City comedy, Stanford and Sons is,
it was basically
came up at an illegal casino.
It was the last of the 80s clubs. It was the last.
The owners on blow.
Owners on blow, other owners on heroin.
Yeah. His brother would always go like this, and they're all deceased, so rest in peace. But his brother would come in and go, here's how it's going to go. Craig's going to go out and do a little intro. MC's going to do 15. And like every show where you're like, I know how comedy works.
Yeah.
By like the third show, you're like, okay.
Yeah, man. No, they just like to hear themselves talk.
Yeah. It's crazy to me that when you start in a business like comedy, you think like you see, and I'm sure it's like this in other professions, but you see how it's done and you're like, oh shit, this is crazy and this is going to be nuts. And then you go somewhere else. And you're like, oh, it's like having alcoholic parents.
Oh, 100%. I compare myself, like, there's that old child's book, The Briar Rabbit.
Yeah.
Where, like, the rabbit lives in the briar patch where no one wants to be, and it's, like, its favorite, it's its home. So it's like, yeah, throw me in there. It's fine. Like, I grew up in the briar patch of comedy.
Yeah.
Like, I go to all these mall funny bones, and I'm just like, hey,
this is nice.
This is great. No one's trying to fuck my girlfriend.
You almost have like, you almost have like immigrant mentality of like when they come here and they go like, work is work. And you're like, yeah. Oh, sure. I should look at it like that.
Oh, you're not going to whip me? My check's going to be right?
Yeah. You're like, oh, fuck. It's going to cash.
Dude, my favorite Craig Glazer story is, you know, coming up, like, as you knew he was a drug addict, but he still had, like, connections to all the agents. And
well, Big J and I on the Bonfire did a deep dive. They put out this video series, and I think it's been taken down off YouTube, but if you can find it, it's great. It's called A Man and His Dog, and it's basically Craig Glazer just bragging about all the pussy he got as he harasses these dogs to sit on his lap.
Yeah.
And he's great. He's like, hey, I fucked her, and she, you know, I'm fucking her, and she's the best body I've ever had. And you're like, yeah, this guy was still connected.
Yes.
I think I have his book. I think, dude.
The King of Sting. There it is.
Right there.
Right there.
Autographed by the Glaze himself.
Oh, that makes it worth $15.
Love your comedy. Good guy. You will fly high in this game. Your friend, Craig Glazer. Now, can't be around for the Saturday early show. I got a slut at the bar. It's exactly what he said.
Oh, yeah.
I think when he handed me this book.
I begged him to watch a tape of mine.
Yeah.
You know, when you're hosting, you're like, just give me some notes. And he made me sit upstairs and watch it with him and four strippers, and he allowed the strippers to give notes.
No.
Yes.
Way. Do you remember any of the notes that the strippers gave you?
No. I was so like, it was the first time I was just like, I can't believe I have to sit through this bullshit. I was so mad. And there,
just a girl chewing gum being like, I don't get it.
I don't know. You're talking so loud.
Hey, Black Barbie doesn't understand it. So if you slow it down, slow it down for her.
I mean, if the strippers don't get it, how am I going to get tickets?
Yeah, dude, that is great. I wish other artists had to go through this low level of judgment, like a painter being hey, we got a couple meth heads outside.
Just come on out. They're going to just tell you how they feel about your technique.
Strokes, everything, the use of oil on canvas.
I don't know. I don't really get it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I worked, you know, I would probably say that the one of the only other jobs I've ever had, but it does come close, is like radio. I did overnights at a rock station in Tucson, and you would see shit like that. Yeah. You would see shit where you're like, hey, do we actually think we're in the entertainment business? Because this does not feels like we're closer to a carnival.
Oh, for sure. Especially back in the 90s and the early, like the shock jock days.
Yeah.
Before Timberlake showed Janet's boob. I remember the first time I took someone to radio. It was Bring Your Daughter to Work Day. And I brought in the host. When we show up, it was Johnny Dare, who's like the big shock jock in Kansas City.
Who was friends and then a falling out and then a friendship with Craig Glazer.
Craig Glazer. And I show up and there's a stripper there blowing a $10 bill off her vagina.
Great.
And me, and there's like a giant bay window looking into the studio. And I just remember being like, no, don't. Don't bring your daughter over here. And then they like brought in this girl that was in like an obese nudie mag.
Yeah.
And she brought her son. Oh. And so they're literally like opening the book and like seeing this girl just spread eagle and her kids like, I thought we were going to McDonald's.
Yeah, I was hoping to get a little sausage, egg, and cheese McMuffin.
Yeah, I just wanted to meet Johnny Dare. I didn't know we were going to look at my mom's vagina and where I came from.
I wish we could tag those kids like cattle. And then just like see where they go.
See where they roam.
Like check in on a thing. Like, where you're like, he's dead. Oh, yeah, yeah. The signal went out.
Oh, he's at a crack dealership. A crack dealership?
Dude, that'd be great.
That would be, come on down to Jimmy's Crack.
He's like, I'm selling everything. And I mean everything. Because I'm smoking my own stash.
I will do whatever you want me to do for however much you want me to do it for.
I'll suck you. I'll fuck you. I just need more crack.
Come on down.
Yeah, I know I should have it. But you have it. Yeah, it is that kind of like, Bring Your Kid to Work Day should only exist in offices or places where kids can watch their parents sit at a desk. You should only go watch your parent go, I don't want to do that. Which basically is that.
Well, or as a parent, you go, I know I'm supposed to bring you to work today, honey, but Johnny Dare has three strippers coming in today.
So I can.
I'll bring you in tomorrow.
Because kids would easily take that day to go, I'll stay at home and play video games.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't need to see that and be traumatized by watching a $10 bill shoot off a girl's pussy. Yeah,
it's like, I'm going to fuck your brain up. Dude. I'm going to fuck your brain up. And you're going to watch. Because now the kid has to learn about, well, it kind of is a learning experience because you're learning about science of pushing air through.
Biology.
Biology. Anatomy.
Yeah.
Sexuality. Like, you come back with marks. Dude, if your mom is a stripper going on the Johnny Dare show and you're just like, that's her pussy.
Yeah, there it is.
Do you think that makes, I think that's like the recipe for making someone that could be great, like a musician.
I mean, there is that possibility, like a rose growing from a pile of trash.
Yeah.
But let's be honest.
Probably not.
A lot of more flies.
Yeah, you're just making flies around shit.
Yeah, yeah. But
God damn.
There are a lot of, we all know comics.
Yeah.
Or music or artists of any kind, they're like, I came up from a really fucked up, like they tell their story and you're just like, how are you a person?
But we only highlight those ones. We don't highlight the majority.
I feel like the news does it for us.
Yeah, where they just go, it's a triple murder, and you're like, follow the wire.
And you're like,
there it is. There it is. Johnny Dare show.
Johnny Dare show.
Shaw's pussy. And then you go, it makes total sense.
No, that's why that happened.
What were your parents like?
So it's so funny. I'm in couples therapy with my girlfriend.
Yeah.
And she's been through fucking everything.
Yeah.
And she goes, what's your experience with therapy? And the therapist said, I was like, I grew up in the best childhood ever.
Really?
Like my parents were still together. They're still, I mean, they fought like everybody does.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's just two people being close together.
That's just two people being close together. But it was never, my dad was never drunk. My mom was never drunk. It was always very, like, family time was always great.
Yeah.
And, like, even when we were poor, my sister and I didn't know it.
Yeah, a lot of times, I grew up, you know, middle class, like, dead middle class. But yeah. A lot of my friends that grew up poor, when you talk to them, they're like, I didn't really even know.
Yeah, no.
Sometimes I'd be embarrassed because I didn't have the right shoes.
We lived in a middle class house, but yeah. It was like my parents were moving up the ladder.
Sure.
So when we first moved in, like my mom will tell you, like there were days where like we had peanut butter and jelly because that's what we could have that day.
Yeah, I think like money issues. It's sometimes I think mostly it's negative to put it on, like to bring it up to the kid, but I think it can be positive if you go like, because my mom was always like, hey, we can't afford that.
Yeah.
Like she would just say stuff.
That's what my mom would
say. When the Ken Griffey Juniors came out, she goes, there's no way I'm spending $100 on sneakers.
100%.
There's just no way. I can't afford that. So we're gonna go to Famous Footwear, and you're gonna get something that can pass off as that.
Oh, dude! I remember one time there was a pair of Reebok pumps at the Half Price store.
Pumps were huge.
I own a pair. Like I'm a big sneaker guy. I have one pair of pumps specifically for 16-year-old Chris.
Yeah, heal that inner child.
Oh yeah. That's every. I mean, that's being a sneaker.
Do they work? I never bought pumps. Do they actually grip your foot?
They get thicker.
Do they pump you up? Do they really pump you up?
I mean, when you put them, I mean, I still pump them.
Yeah,
they're unlaced and pumped. So it makes no sense.
I was thinking about going back and getting LA gear light up when you walk because I always wanted those. And my mom was like, those are ridiculous.
My girlfriend and I were in a Balenciaga store and I'm starting to make enough money to where those prices don't scare me.
Sure.
And they had a pair of $1,500 light up shoes and she had to talk me out of it.
That's a good girlfriend.
I see why
you're going to therapy. So she was like,
yeah. Bro, like I was like, she was like, it does like 1,000 colors. Like you can download an app or whatever.
That's pretty cool.
And I was like, so I could just.
Honestly, I'm starting to be more Team Chris than her.
Dude. And I was like, what a flex that would be.
Yeah, just stomping. Just
stomping. You're like,
hey. Matching your shirt. When you just go to the thing and you go, I'm going to do pink.
Oh, did I change shirts? Yeah. Well, it's fuchsia now, motherfucker. Yeah.
Watch me walk away. Bloop, bloop, bloop. But that also. It's got to be, that's one of the only things that you enjoy that other people will be like, why are you doing that? That's like a thing, that's like an obnoxious shoe.
Oh, yeah.
Where if you're not wearing it and you're not friends with you, you're like, look at this fucking guy.
This fucking asshole.
Teal lights.
And you're like, yeah. But then part of me is like, I don't mind being that guy.
Yeah. That's getting older. Were you like that when you were younger?
No, when I was younger, I was super like, what do you think about this? Is this cool? If you don't think this is cool, I will take all of this off right now.
I would say that is the best part of hitting your 40s.
Yeah.
Is you start to go like, I like it.
I like it. I don't care.
I don't give a shit.
You look stupid. Well, good.
Yeah.
Because no, you know what? That 24-year-old girl wasn't going to fuck me anyway.
Dude, when I went to college at the University of Arizona, I was like, totally comfortable in Colorado wearing jean shorts and liquor t-shirts that my friend Danny's dad gave me.
Yeah.
Just, he was a liquor salesman and he just gave me a box of liquor tees. And I was like, yeah, dude, whatever. I don't give a fuck. And then I went to Arizona and everyone's like, what are you wearing? And that was the first time I felt like naked at school.
Oh.
Where I was like, jorts and a Sousa tequila shirt isn't cool.
Come on.
But I'm almost
like me for my personality.
Yeah. I'm almost back to it. Yeah. I'm almost like, dude, dig up a box of those shirts. Let me get a fucking.
Oh, they had this, vintage Pepsi Michael Jackson t-shirt from the 1980s. And I was like, oh, I got to get that.
Yeah.
She was like, it looks stupid. I was like, so did everything from the 80s.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, that's what the 80s look like.
Yeah. I found comfort, you know, like I went in early 20s. The first time I shed caring was professional wrestling. Cause I'm a big pro wrestling fan. And I would like hide it. Like I was gay. Like they would be like, you watch wrestling? You're like, no, what? And then I got DVR'd. I got back into Monday Night Raw. And then I was like, I think I'm going to buy an Andre the Giant shirt. And then I just started wearing it. And then you see other people and it like forms a community where you're like, you're wearing an NWO shirt. I'm wearing an Andre the Giant shirt. We're connected in some way.
The worst is when you go assert, like, I mean, if anyone's seen my first special, I'm wearing bell bottoms, a crushed velvet jacket.
Dude, that look is fucking wild. You got the long curly hair.
I look like the auxiliary percussionist for Manassas.
And was that a phase where you were like, this rocks?
Well, like I grew up huge fan of the Black Crowes, Allman Brothers. Like all of my heroes looked exactly dressed like that.
70s rockers.
So when I finally got money of any kind, I went and got bell bottoms made and went and got all the shirts and jackets that I wanted to wear. And I was like, oh, I'm starting this.
Yeah.
Like everyone, I thought I was going to start a trend.
Here comes the beginning of something big.
Dude, I'd show up to a gig in Peoria and people just like, who is this queerbo?
Did you ever feel the audience feel that when you went up in like that? Were you like confident enough that you're like, because some people can do that and wear it.
Yeah.
And the audience goes, I'm not breaking this guy. But I feel like me and you are similar in the way that an audience can smell that weird at any moment, go, do I look stupid? This is stupid.
I definitely know an audience can tell when I don't feel like a couple of the Burt shows this week. Like I didn't really go up there with a plan. Like I was just like,
here we go.
Here we go.
Also, you're in an arena. Balls move.
You're in an arena. Ball. Yeah. And you're just like, I'll start with this and see where it goes.
Yeah.
And then I was like, after that, but as soon as like, I was like, what do I do next? Like I could feel the room.
Yeah.
Be like, I don't think he knows what he's doing.
Yeah. Dude, that's the comedy's the job where that is dangerous only for you.
Yeah.
Like a doctor, if you feel that way, you're like, am I in danger? If they go like, I've never heard that before. And you're like, you're supposed to hear all this shit. You're supposed to know exactly what the fuck I'm going through.
Yeah, no, we're the only ones I think that can just be like, what the fuck was
a mechanic
doing?
Being like, the engine doesn't work.
Huh.
Even someone doing like fixings on your house or like landscapers going like, yeah, I don't know.
I'll start at the yard and just kind of figure it out from there.
And I'm starting to feel like comedy is a little overexposed. That's why I was saying like, so I don't like to talk about it too much on podcasts.
Yeah.
Because I'm starting to realize that other people are realizing that we don't know what the fuck we're doing. And we're like, we were enjoying it for too long. And then some of us started acting like we knew what we were doing. And the audience goes, you don't know what you're doing.
Yeah, you know what you're doing.
And that feeling, you're like, I don't. But bell bottoms on stage.
I had to do it. I on stage, like I never felt different.
Really?
Like as soon as I got on stage, I was like, this is the show. We're rocking it. I'm a rock star. I'm dressed like a rock star. Yeah. And, but walking into the club.
Were people looking at you at the bar?
Because I wasn't really, like once Ugly and Angry came out, like there were people that knew what they were getting into.
Sure.
But before, I mean, I wore it for 4 years leading up to that.
Yeah.
And so,
and you're still winning crowds every night.
And I'm still winning crowds every night, but walking in, people would just be like, who the fuck? I remember I was in Tampa.
Side Splitters?
Improv.
Okay.
And Ybor City
left. Oh, Ybor City, yeah.
So I would leave the Improv, and there was a sandwich shop that was open late. I don't think it's there anymore. And I walk in, and the guy just looked at me and goes, what is it, 70s night?
And you go, fuck.
I just went, I looked at him, I go, what is it, deli night? And it was a stupid joke, but I didn't know what else to say. Yeah, I was,
you're stupid.
You're fucking.
Make me a sandwich.
Fuck. God damn.
I'm so hurt. That's what's always funny now is like the internet really shows you people when like people attack you and you go back at them and they're like, well, I was just joking. And you're like, oh, fuck. All right.
Yeah.
I get so defensive.
Because it's hard to tell tone in the comments.
You can't. Are you bad at texts? Do you misread texts a lot?
Oh, all the time. Especially with your significant other. Yeah. You're like, hey, why are you yelling at me? She was like, I was just giving you shit.
Or you come in and you're like, are we in something? And
you're like,
no, not at all. It's busting your balls.
Like, oh, okay. My bad.
Have you had the therapist in couples therapy take her side too many times?
To be fair, we've only done it once. So it was kind of like a feel it out kind of thing. But not so far. She seems to be pretty fair.
I feel like I would be very sensitive of the fact. I would be like scorning in my head.
No, I'm trying. I mean, I'm trying not to. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I'm just trying to find out if it's me.
Yeah, that's all you want.
Yeah, like, because I don't think it is.
Yeah.
And if it is, I'm at an age now where it's like, we better fix this shit.
Yeah, you can't do the 20s thing where you're like, whatever, it's cool. Yeah, I'm crazy.
If you don't love this,
you won't like
this
me.
Is who I am.
Yeah, I'm so fucking nuts. And you're like, no, dude, that's not how it is.
You get into your 40s, you're like, no, man, fucking, you're stupid. You're an idiot, and sometimes you're kind of a dick.
I'm having that moment a lot right now where you're like, oh, fuck, it's me.
Yeah.
Oh, fuck, it's me. Like, I'm having a thing right now where, like, if a friend doesn't text back, I'll start being like, well, what the fuck?
Oh, yeah.
What the fuck? What, you think, what, we're not friends?
Oh.
I'm there for you.
Oh,
you're not there for me. And then I call them, and they're like, I'm busy.
Yeah, dude, I was, when you, and they're always super apologetic.
Yeah.
And like, you're coming in hot, like, oh, I'm going to light this dude up. And they're like, bro, I'm so sorry. My mom was in the hospital and then my dad got in a car wreck. And you're like, okay, that's fine then.
I just went through a thing. I grew up with Mike McDaniel, the head coach of the Miami Dolphins.
Oh, yeah.
And so I've just like, when I'm walking my dog or whatever, I'll call a friend just like to talk.
Yeah.
Someone I haven't talked to in a while. One of my old friends from Colorado or whatever, a comic that I know might be like out somewhere. And I've been calling, it's end of the season. You know, your Chiefs knocked him out. I was at that game. It was horrifically cold.
Yeah.
Thank God I
people
got this.
People literally lost digits.
And died. I think a guy died. We got to sit inside, so thanks, Mike. We tailgated, and we were like, me and my friend Chad and his brother Cole were laughing at how cold it was.
Dude, I was offered so many tickets to that game.
Dude, they were giving them away.
And I was like, there's no way. I went to a Green Bay game, sat in a suite, and then they opened the windows.
That's ridiculous.
As soon as the game starts, I'm like,
No.
What are we doing?
That's Wisconsin brain where they go like.
That is Wisconsin, and they look at me.
If they're going to go through it, we're going to go through it.
It's not that bad.
Yeah, oh, but it's just it's a light wind.
And you're like,
dude, it is 12 degrees.
Yeah, dude. I couldn't get inside fast enough.
I was in Lawrence. We went to the University of Kansas basketball game that weekend. And my sister wanted to go watch the game at a bar 3 blocks away, which is too far to walk at -12, but not far enough to Uber.
Yeah.
And so
it's where you get in the Uber and you feel bad for the driver.
Yeah. You feel like you hand them $20 and you're just I'm not trying to die here. And I remember walking back. I was drunk and we had won, but I was still just like, it was so cold. It made me mad.
Yeah.
I was just, oh,
it's funny when weather affects you like that,
dude,
where it pulls an emotion out of you. Cause we got out of the truck at Arrowhead. We parked, we were like tailgating, we're in the truck, heat's blasting, we're fine or whatever. And then we geared up, put everything on, and we stepped outside and I just started maniacally laughing. Yeah. I was like, this is crazy.
This is insane. And also, this game is on television.
Yeah, it's also like, I started getting mad about, it's funny when weather is so bad, it makes you start questioning other things. Where I went, why is the Browns-Texans game the day game? Right now,
yeah.
And this is the night game.
Yeah.
This should be during the day game, so the sun's up, so it's less cold.
Why don't we just cover the streets with a roof and heat them? Why are we still being outside all the time?
Why do we live outside?
Why don't we live like the Fraggles underneath the ground where there is no weather?
Burrow, Kansas City. But it was, dude, it was one of those games where we went on the field. We always go, like, whenever I go to a Dolphins game, we go on the sidelines to say what's up to Mike.
Yeah.
But it was so cold that you just couldn't tell who anyone was. And I have a picture with me and his father-in-law, and it's like a time travel thing where the barometer was like, it was like spinning because it didn't know how cold it was.
Wow.
It was like pinned, and then it would pin again, and it was broke. And you're like, dude, this is crazy.
And it just comes up, it's fucking cold.
Yeah, and Mahomes' helmet cracked. Do you remember that? Like, it cracked, and they had to get a whole new helmet for him. We don't need that. You don't need that football game.
We can postpone it.
Yeah, just everyone come back tomorrow.
We can make the Super Bowl the next week. Like, we'll reschedule plans.
People are walking around, but thank God the Chiefs won the Super Bowl, because if they would have gotten bounced in like the divisional round after that, and they're like, yeah, I went to the Chiefs game and now I can't hold stuff.
Chiefs lost 90. Yeah, they're like, 23.
Hey, three. Are you saying 3 rings? No, it's I lost that.
No, that was.
I lost that too.
I lost the middle one because I was flipping them off when they left.
Dude, it was just one of those things where you went inside and you're like, this is the most privileged I've felt in a long time.
But I just look, man. I love my Chiefs. I love my Royals. But I just don't understand that level of fandom.
Well, what it is I think it becomes, you're like, you feel like the Chiefs are going to know.
I guess.
If you left.
Maybe for some people.
I would have pissed myself to make myself warm.
Maybe as a performer. But I think as a performer or someone that is in front of people, I kind of have this thing where I'm like, they don't care.
They don't care.
They don't care.
That's why when someone gets traded to, like, or they sign with the divisional rival, and people are like, how can you? It's like, they don't care about you.
Yeah, it's a business.
They care about you in the moment. They're hookers.
But also, that team doesn't care about them either.
No, that's why teams business. Move.
Yeah.
Like, Oakland lost everybody. Oakland was so dedicated, because I grew up, my dad's family's from the Bay Area. I'm real big into the Niners, real big into the Giants, but then I'm a Denver Nuggets fan because I grew up in Colorado.
Oh, okay.
And I picked them. That was the one team that I chose. Yeah. Niners and Giants were shoved down my throat, which I love.
For sure.
It's like a religion. But now with the Nuggets, I'm like, oh, this is, it's paying off. I chose them and finally they're good again.
Yeah.
But Oakland, I remember watching them with the Warriors when the Warriors were garbage and just they would kind of be okay. And then they got a dynasty and they're like, we're going across the water to San Francisco.
Yeah.
All these tech bros built us a new state, a new arena.
But also it's on Oakland to be like, oh, well, if we want this awesome basketball team, we're going to have to pay some money.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it is, I think with sports, a lot of the times people forget that it's business.
Dude, and like that Oakland stadium was, the baseball stadium was garbage.
Yeah,
and Coliseum? For years.
Yeah. Oh, not even the Coliseum, the Oakland A's Park.
Yeah.
And now they're leaving and going to Sacramento for two seasons.
And then they're going to go to the Vegas and they're going to get that stadium looks amazing.
Yeah.
And it's just like Kansas City. They just knocked down a downtown stadium.
Yeah.
Because all these fucking rednecks never leave. They've never been to a downtown stadium.
Yeah.
Like I firmly believe that as soon as you go to any stadium like Denver, Pittsburgh, St. Louis, where it's downtown.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, we have to have a stadium downtown.
I mean, Oracle Park for the Giants is right near downtown San Francisco.
Yeah.
And it's like a beautiful baseball park.
And you go and you go have, you eat right around the park. You get some drinks.
Cleveland, when you go to that park, great is it going in when you, I got to go to a day playoff game when I was working Hilarities because the stadium's right there.
And you like, you don't even see it. You're like, you're walking down the street. You're like, oh shit, Progressive Field.
Yeah, that's how it is. Detroit, Ford Field, right downtown Detroit. Dude. So you can just walk in and you're like, oh, this is what a city should be. Whenever you go to a city like that, Indianapolis or any of that, you're like, oh, it's right here. You know, Denver is pretty close. These stadiums where you have to drive 40 fucking minutes. So that's the problem with the Niners is they're now in Santa Clara. They're just in a whole different town.
Yeah, you got to like, that's a day trip.
Yeah, it is. It's 45 minutes on the 101 to get down there.
And that's if traffic's okay.
If it's okay. We're not talking about game day traffic. Yeah.
4 hours.
Yeah, but also you kind of understand if you want to keep the theme alive of it being a business, they need, owners want as much help as they can get building $1 billion.
Yeah.
Because they want to make money. The whole reason they own the team is so that they can make money. And it's like, oh yeah, if the difference is it's going to cost me $4 billion to put it downtown or $2 billion and I get some help from the county, I'm going to put it in a fucking field.
But also that county is going to make a mint.
Because they're going to parking, restaurants, everything that would go to that city.
And taxes on everything that's sold within that in that stadium.
That shit has to be so complicated that if you're a lawyer that deals with that, you got to, like, whenever you hear these talking heads on ESPN or whatever, you go, it's not that easy.
And those are the guys that are like 40 years old and are on 19 heart medications.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because
they're just like, dude, I had to study 5 fucking law books to understand
I've
this.
I've got 3 municipalities barking down my throat.
I got a city council I've never even heard of before. Like, yeah. Oh, you're going to ruin me?
You got couples therapy, do you? Yeah. I got the mayor of New York City.
Yeah. Well, that's the whole thing. They were like trying to get a stadium in New York City and everyone's like, fuck that. What are you doing? That's not going to work.
Where are you going to put it?
But to the original point, it's just funny to know that there's guys like us texting one of those guys being like, doesn't answer my text.
Yeah.
Where you're like, fucking you're like, good asshole. Friend. And the guy's like, you have no idea what I'm going through.
I thought the owner of the Royals and I were tight.
Yeah,
but
dude.
Apparently he's busy. Because
what happened was I called McDaniel and then I was texting him and I said to Katie, my fiance, I go, this guy's not calling me back or whatever.
Yeah.
And then I put on ESPN and he's at University of Texas's pro day watching. This was like 3 weeks ago. Watching quarterbacks throw, and I go, "Oh,
that's probably Jelly Roll's a good buddy of mine."
Yeah,
and like we'll text all the time, and then all of a sudden he'll fall off the face of the planet, and then I'll see him, and he'll be like, "Ah, oh, I changed my number again."
Yeah,
and I'm like, "Oh, well, thanks for the heads up." Yeah, bro.
But you don't understand that like his number gets out.
Yeah,
I've never judged like knowing Pete Davidson when he changes his number 6 times. You go, I'm sure there's a lot of crazy people that want your phone number. That when they get it, they ruin it for the rest of
them. And also, you get drunk or high, and you think this dude's cool, and you give him your number, and then...
And just invite him into the house, and then they're just...
And next thing you know, he's calling you every... Like, we've all had it happen to us, and we're not even Pete Davidson.
Have you ever texted someone famous or DM'd someone famous and regretted it instantly?
Like, as far as like reaching out to them, like cold call or
both, or just sending a text that you're like, I wish I could have that one back.
Yeah. They're like, especially when I first meet a celebrity, like it's hard to, like your brain is like, oh, I should tell them this. They'll think this is hilarious. And then you're like, you type it out and you send it. You're like, that was stupid. That is obviously me just trying to say hello.
Yeah. And now you can delete the text, but it lets them know they deleted the text.
Yeah, you're like, why did you unsend me? I thought I sent it to another Chris Robinson.
I just immediately, yeah, dude, that's got to be one. I mean, you feel like Scotty in Boogie Nights. You send it and you're like, I'm a fucking idiot.
Like, you almost want to call me, I'm sorry.
I'm sorry, dude. Did you ever, I mean, you're a big Black Crowes guy.
Yeah.
Did you get to meet them and like get to know them at all?
Oh yeah, no, like we're super tight. But when that first happened, it was tough for me to be like.
How did you meet them?
So I did, Nick Thune.
Yeah, love Nick Thune. Love,
best dude in the world. I haven't seen him in probably eight years.
He's on the road with Nate Bargatze right now. And but he's also, I think, putting out a special soon. He's fucking great. I saw him around Christmas time.
Also one of those guys that I haven't seen in 6 years. But as soon as I see him, it'll be like no time has passed.
Those are the great people, friends like that, that don't take it personally when you don't see him forever.
You're just like, this is life, man.
This is great.
We get busy.
Yeah.
And you do your thing. I do. You know, especially when you're in our industry and we're all in one man submarines most of the time.
Yeah.
And then we come out and we're like, oh, there's a world outside of the four people that I communicate with.
Yeah. And you're like, hey, and it is, you got to remember that. I mean, I know we take it personally, but you got to remember that.
Yeah. But I don't take it personally with people like Nick, cause we were never super close. But
sure.
Nick calls me one day. We were hanging out a lot more at this time. And he was on the Tonight Show as like a correspondent.
Yeah.
For so much so that like his family stopped going.
That's so funny.
You know?
They're
like,
over it?
When they're like, oh, yeah, no, we were there last week. Great, I don't want to drive to Burbank again.
Fine.
So he's like.
They go like this. Then it's your job. Then you're the kid with your mom in the pussy of Johnny Dare where you go like, that's what she does.
Oh, yeah. No, my parents used to, and I get it. My parents used to come to a lot of shows, and now they come to one, and then that's it. And they're like, I don't need to see any more of them.
Good new act. Like this joke.
I'll be in bed.
Yeah.
But Nick Thune called and he goes, hey, man, the Black Crowes are on the show today. I don't have any guests. If you want to come out, you're more than welcome.
And he knew you were.
He knew I was just over. At this point, I'd probably traveled to 30 different places to see him.
Love that.
And luckily, I had like 3 hours to prepare.
Breathe.
Yeah, because I met Robin Williams by surprise one time.
Me too.
And was an absolute basket case. Because I remember all I wanted to tell him, and it was a long sentence, but I was like, my dad's best friends in business with your brother.
Okay.
They did some wine stuff together.
Great.
And I thought that was going to be my in.
You thought that was going to open everything.
And I just kept going, my dad's, and he was cool, but he was just like, okay.
Yeah.
And it was me, Anthony Clark, and my friend Charlotte, and he was full Robin Williams.
Yeah.
Like, just like, oh, this guy,
look at her. Yeah. Oh, what are going on with this? Like, doing the arms behind her.
You see it happening. You're like, I can't believe this is it.
So you're doing it.
I had that moment scarred me for life. So, like, for 3 hours, I was like, don't Robin Williams this. Dude, don't Robin Williams this.
I would have killed to have, like, a Ring doorbell of you in your apartment going, hi, Chris Porter. Chris Robinson. Chris Porter.
What up, Mr. Robinson? No.
Hey.
See, Chris. Fucking.
Kate Hudson. I start doing stuff.
Hey, who's twice as hard? No, that's stupid.
Fuck.
It's fucking. Fuck. Hey, am I hard to handle? God damn.
Don't start the songs.
Did you talk to angels? So, I was like, introduce yourself, be cool, and don't speak unless spoken to.
Was
kind of my thing.
Great self-advice.
And it was good because I got to the thing, went to Nick's green room. We're just kind of hanging out.
Could he tell you were nervous?
I don't know. You'd have to ask Nick. He didn't say anything about it, but I'm sure he could tell.
Because as a friend, you got to be like.
You got to be like.
It's like first date energy.
You're like, all right, dude, you're going to meet her.
You just keep putting on your chapstick. You're like.
Well, I look good.
Yeah, I look good.
So I go watch Nick do his segment. And then we're leaving. We're walking out of the studio, and I'll never forget it. We looked to her right, and Chris Robinson's kind of holding court with like five guys. And he goes, come on. And he walks right through the guys and walks right up to Chris Robinson and goes, hey, man, I'm Nick. I was just on the show. And Chris is like, yeah, I saw you. And he goes, this is my buddy Chris. He's a huge fan. I just want to introduce you guys. And he's like, hey, what's up, man? Hang out and, you know, feel free to hang out. So we just sat there in this like circle of dudes, and he shot the shit, and I made a couple jokes, and like it went well. And I was like, all right, all right.
And that's a situation though. And I want people to know at home, doesn't always go well.
No.
Because I'll tell you, a younger Dan would have like laughed too much or been like, got him. Do stuff like that.
Chris Robinson from way back.
Black Crow, more like Black No. I got to go. I have to leave right now. Because you have that feeling. It's.
I'm going to shake my moneymaker on down the line here, buddy.
You don't want to be too much.
Yeah. But you also don't want to be the weird guy that's just staring at him.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I played it off. And then at the end, I go, hey, man, it was a pleasure to meet you. I got my picture with him. And I go, I'll see you in a few weeks. I'll be in Kansas City at that show. And he goes, oh, man, you got to come backstage and hang out.
Where you just... Did you get the cold water chest?
I was like where it starts to like close in and get gray. And you're just like, So I'm like, that'd be great. So he called the tour manager over and he goes, give him your email. Make sure he's on the list for Kansas City. So 2 weeks later, me and my best friend at the time, we go and I go, hey, man, I know how this goes. It's been 2 weeks. There's a lot of shit that's gone on.
Smart.
If we walk up to the box office and we don't have passes, just don't.
Don't be mad.
Don't be mad. Don't be butthurt. Don't let it ruin your evening.
I'll tell you right now, tempering your expectations in that moment is probably one of the smartest things you can do on any level. Because you go like, hey, whatever happens is a win.
Yeah.
We gotta remember we're on the outside looking in.
And people are people.
I feel like a lot of people now, and I don't want to, but I could see myself getting carried away, especially in the age of marketing where everyone's going like, you're the main character. This is your story. Yeah. You kind of go like, I met him. He said this. This is someone that believed his alcoholic father was always going to come back.
Oh, okay.
That's what I mean.
Yeah, yeah.
It's smart to temper your expectations.
And so we walked up and I'm like, yo, if this doesn't work out, just don't be mad. Let's just enjoy the show. And he goes, okay. And I walked up to the box office and I go, hey, I think I'm on the ban list. My name's Chris Porter. And she pulls out this full 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper. It has the Black Crowes logo and one fucking name on it. And it's mine. And she goes, yep, that's you. And hands us two passes. And we Wayne's World our way. We didn't know where to go. We just walked in like, where does this get us?
You want to show anybody? There's a bunch of guys in yellow shirts going, I don't fucking know, yeah, dude.
They're like, that gets you anywhere you want to go. And I just goes, where's the band?
That's awesome.
And he goes, the elevator's up there. And he told us how to get there. And I just remember turning the corner. And they're all just kind of hanging out like it was an American Apparel commercial. Yeah. Like at the end of the hallway. And I turn the corner and Chris goes, there he is. And I was like, oh, fuck.
Did you come?
A little bit.
You shoot pre-cum right there. What the fuck, dude? What the fuck? Was he into them too?
He was my road dog for all of the 30 shows we went to. That's the best.
Because you don't want to go with someone that is like, is that him?
Smells weird.
There's a lot of patchouli.
Yeah. And we showed up and he talked to us. Literally, they pulled him away and they went right on stage. And like, we didn't even get out front in time for first notes. Like, it was like, oh, okay, I'll be right back. Like, it was like that. And like, the friendship just kind of kept going. And
So here's a good follow up is after that happens, what do you do for the second hang? Because you got the tour managers. Were there numbers exchanged? Was there anything?
He gave me his email. Chris gave me his personal email after that.
Now.
And I was
like, what was that draft process?
You're like, don't abuse this.
Yeah.
Don't send him memes.
Yeah.
Like, just.
You always want to send him memes.
I sent him a nice, like, hey, man, thanks for everything.
Great.
Thanks for having us backstage. Great follow.
This is a great lesson for anyone that gets an email. Because I'm a huge Queens of the Stone Age fan.
Yeah.
I've never met Josh Homme, but I'm learning from you. If the situation ever happens, I'm gonna be like, remember what Chris Porter did. Just get the email. You don't temper your expectations.
So Funny story. Bert Kreischer calls me the other day.
Yeah.
I'm in Nashville, and he goes, I met Chris Robinson last night. It did not go well. And I go, go on.
Oh, yeah.
And he goes, so I'm at Dan Tana's with Whitney Cummings and her her boyfriend, Chris something or other. And that the only reason I said that is because it comes into play later. I saw Chris Robinson, and I said, oh, he's friends with Chris Porter. I'm a huge fan. That's my in.
That's always the in is, if you know somebody I know, I'm going to use that name like a credit card.
Like, we're buddies. Because
we're Eskimo buddies. We've got the same friend.
But then Bert says, he was like, well, I thought, you know, I'm pretty big. Maybe who knew I was.
Bert also, and here's the thing about Bert. It's very lovable, but also can be dangerous. He's a drag race car. Yeah. He doesn't go 0 to 60 on a highway. He goes 0 to 120 in 15 feet.
And he just he walks up to Bert. He walks up to Chris. And goes, "Hey," Which might work.
It's like 7 out of 10 times.
Especially if you're Bert fucking Kreischer.
He's doing arenas.
Yeah, even if you don't know who he is, you're probably like, I know you from somewhere.
You've been on my algorithm.
Yeah. And Chris is just like, Chris isn't on Instagram or any of that shit. And he was like,
he's a rock star.
He's like, hey. Oh, Chris reads all the time. Like,
I love that.
Yeah. He's like, if he's not on stage or playing music, he's got his nose in some weird, like,
psychological,
trippy.
Oh, yeah.
Space book.
Yeah. I love that.
Yeah. No, he's really cool. He's an interesting dude. Anyway, Bert walks up to him and he goes, hey, and Chris is like, hey.
Hey.
And he goes, oh, I'm friends with your buddy. And Chris goes, who's your buddy? And he goes, Bert says, Chris Robinson.
That's so funny. You, I'm friends with you.
You're my buddy.
We're buddies now.
And Chris goes, no. And he goes, I'm sorry. I'm friends with Chris. So he says Whitney's boyfriend's name.
Oh, no. Bert, you're 0-2. You're down 0-2 in the count.
And Chris is like, I don't know who the fuck that is.
Oh.
And Bert goes, fuck. Shit. Who's your buddy that's a comedian? And CR goes, Chris Porter. And he's like, yeah, I'm friends with him.
And now that sounds, from Chris Robinson's perspective,
he's like, you didn't even know like his name.
You're just like trying to find the end.
Yeah, he goes, you didn't even know his name. And Bert looks at him and goes, I don't even know my name right now.
That's great. That's great. That's redeemable.
And there's a video on his Instagram that Whitney shot of the whole thing.
Great.
Including Bert coming back going, that did not go well.
Yeah, that's great. There's for all the success stories, there's nothing better than massive fails.
I'll tell you what. And I'm at a point now where like I meet a lot of pretty big, like I met Wayne Gretzky.
And great.
Didn't give a shit. Like I'm from Kansas, so hockey means nothing.
Yeah. It's so funny because, Katie is from Boston, huge Bruins, huge hockey. Hockey's like their sport.
Yeah.
I've never, I was kind of into the Avs in 96 and 01, growing up in Colorado, but didn't stick with it.
If you're not in one of 8 cities in this country,
one of those cities.
You're like.
Because I'm getting into it now.
Oh, are you?
And it's fun.
I never know what's going on.
Playoff, here's the thing, and this is just my honest sports fandom. I'm highly committed to the NFL. Preseason, regular season, playoffs. I know everything that's going on. I know about the draft. I read other people's draft reports. Oh, I just love the NFL.
Yeah.
Everything else, playoffs.
Okay.
I'll watch regular season basketball because I like it. If it's on, I'll watch some regular season baseball. But I lock in before the playoffs. And so now, hockey playoffs, I'm like, these are fucking unbelievable.
Yeah.
It's just so much. Now marrying into a hockey family, you're like, oh, this fucking rules. And then it opens up one of the most embarrassing stories about not knowing sports. Probably like 12 years ago, all I had was a cellar spot at 2 a.m. So I'm like, fuck. And I'm living in Queens. I'm like, what am I going to come in at 12:30 in the morning? So I'm like, fuck it. I don't know. I'll stay at home. And then Sam Morril texts me and he goes, hey, Joe Mackey and I are having a joint birthday party at Playwrights across from Caroline's. Come and hang out. Great. I had quit drinking by then, but I was like, I'll get high and I'll go hang out with them. It'll be a fun hang. I show up. I walk into the bar and Sam goes, yeah, Bill Burr's over at the bar watching the Bruins and the Blackhawks. It's like Stanley Cup.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, oh, Bill Burr's one of my favorite comedians. I'll go say hi. And I go over and Burr's like, hey, what's up, Danny? How you doing? And I'm like, and I stood there and tried to watch hockey. And Bill Burr's a very big Boston Bruins fan.
Yeah.
And I stood there and tried to watch hockey. And it felt, I felt so fucking out of place.
It's like watching opera.
Dude. And I just, I felt like a girlfriend. I kept being like, are the good guys winning? Like, you know, like,
so, be like, so is this going well?
And or? I'd be like, oh, that was a good play. And he's like, you know, when you're super into something, like when I watch professional wrestling and someone's like, what is that? And you go, it's a ladder match. You like have to explain something. So it is like, it's tough to get into if you don't know anything, but you have to have a little grace. But man, now that I'm getting into it, I'm like, teach me everything. I'm like, lay it on.
That's
me.
Awesome. Yeah. No, cause,
but Wayne Gretzky is Wayne Gretzky.
Is Wayne Gretzky. I met him at Kid Rock's house in Malibu.
Pretty cool.
And I walked in and he stood up and he goes, hey, I'm Wayne. And I looked over. I was like, oh, fuck, Wayne Gretzky.
Yeah.
But the fact that I wasn't immediately like,
probably put him at ease.
He loved me.
Yeah.
He.
Because you know what it is he spent all of his life being looked at like a circus animal. Yeah. And you just walked in and you're like, oh, you're a guy named Wayne.
Yeah, yeah.
And he was like, yeah, I also happen to be. Like, you wonder at what point those people go, well, I happen to be the greatest fucking hockey player of all time.
Oh, yeah. By the way.
Yeah, by the way. I'm amazing at something. But that's probably so, they're probably so used to the opposite that you coming in and doing that.
Oh, yeah. And especially, like, and that's my advice to anyone, like, when you meet a rock star is, talk about anything but what the fuck they do.
Yeah, because they are talking about what they do all the time.
Like, they know your song affects you emotionally. That's why they wrote it. You don't need to tell them about how it saved. I mean, look.
If you get to that moment, that's nice.
That's great.
But don't force the issue.
If it's a meet and greet that you paid to go see, tell them all the stories. But if you're just hanging out and you want to be friends with someone, just talk to them about normal shit.
Dude, that I did Bonnaroo in 2015, and then Ari Shaffir and I went back in 2016 because Ari was going to do like a secret show, and they couldn't pay us because we were there the year before. But what they did is they gave us passes and meal passes. So we camped out, and it was like LCD Sound System and Pearl Jam. Pearl Jam was the big show on Saturday.
Yeah.
And we were at the comedy tent, and Judd Apatow was one of the comedians there, and Eddie Vedder and Judd were going to do a buddy thing on stage.
Yeah.
So Ari and I are just like smoking a joint at the comedy tent, and Eddie Vedder walks up, and it's fucking hot. It's like Tennessee in the summer, and Eddie Vedder is like smoking a cigarette, and I just start talking to Eddie Vedder about the weather and about smoking when it's hot. And how it, like, you know, you want to smoke when it's cold and cloudy.
For sure.
And he's just, we're having a great conversation. He's just being like, yeah, man, that's exactly how I feel. And I love cigarettes, but man, a cigarette when it's cloudy, it's hard to turn down. And he's just being fucking awesome. And then I go, can I get a picture? And I just watch his face go,
fuck, like, yeah.
You fucking ruined it.
We had a great time.
And you ruined it.
Oh, I was, I hang out with Kid Rock a lot. I was hanging out with Kid Rock, and Dan Auerbach was there.
Yeah, Black Keys.
Black Keys, huge producer.
Yeah.
And we were shooting the shit. I made him laugh a whole bit. Like, we were hanging out most of the night, and he was like, you know, we were making fun of some people and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, well, hey, man, next time you're in L.A., give me a call. And I was like, you want to exchange numbers? And he was like, yeah, no, I'll take your number.
That's so funny.
And I was like,
that's a guy that's been burned on that too many times.
And then you're like, okay, man, you don't have to.
Yeah. Oh, that feels. Yeah. Dude, that just
like he doesn't even save it. Like he just dials he goes, it in.
Boop boop boop, then, boop boop. Bye. Bye.
Yeah. Like he'll never see it again.
Dude, there used to be this show at this shitty bar in New York called Bar None. Right. And this is like 2007. So I just moved here, and I'm doing this bar show, and one of the girls that carries around shots and test tubes. Was gorgeous.
Yeah.
And I'm talking to her. I'm like half drunk. I'm making her laugh or whatever. And I'm like, yeah, I think I'm in.
Yeah.
And I go, can I get your number? And she wrote something down on a paper. And I was like, there we go. And she handed it to me. And it was her MySpace name. And I was like, oh, you could have just said no.
Yeah, man. Just say no.
Just say like, just say you got a boyfriend. That, Kate, don't give me your MySpace.
Also, Dan could have just said, nah, man.
Yeah. Nah, I'm not cool with that.
Yeah, or just like, I got plenty of friends, bro. And I've been like, that's fair.
That is kind of a badass line.
That's absolutely.
I'm full on friends.
Dude, and that's the line I've used.
Yeah.
Where like young comics are like, yo, I want to come hang out. We'll be friends. I'm like, nah, buddy. Yeah. I barely got time for the friends I got.
Yeah, dude, there's moments, there's sometimes with a younger comic where they'll go like you'll, like even if I work with them at a club or something and they MC and I like, we'll DM on Instagram like, hey, great job, man, or whatever. And then like 3 months later, they'll be like, hey, I'm working on this bit. And then you look and it's like a long text and you go, buddy.
I don't even answer those.
No, you got to leave them on read.
Yeah.
Because you like, almost go, it's better for you that you're embarrassed.
Yeah.
And if you don't feel embarrassed, then I want nothing to do with you.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to run
you
this back.
You have no self-awareness.
Yeah. If you're not like, why the fuck? Dude, I've told this story before. I told it on the Bonfire and I've told it on a podcast, but it's the most embarrassing comedy story where Louis C.K. was running Chewed Up. This was like 2008.
Okay.
And
Chewed Up is a...
HBO special he did.
Oh, okay.
So he's running the hour for Chewed Up. It's like probably my favorite Louis C.K. hour. And he was like, doing sets. And Joe List and I were at this club called the Comedy Village. It was the old Boston. And it got turned into the Comedy Village. And on Monday nights, Joe would MC. I would be out front barking. And we'd just get drunk and do this really bad Monday night show. Joe was opening for Nick DiPaolo on the road. When a comic's on, he goes over to the cellar around the corner to get his check from Nick. And he comes back and he goes, dude, Louis's at the cellar. Go let him know we have a show working. Let him know. He'll probably come by and do a set. Now, Joe doesn't know Louis at this time, and I certainly don't know Louis. I go over to the cellar. I talk to Shaq, RIP, Shaq, the bouncer. I go, can I go in and watch Louis? And he's like, yeah, come on in. And I go downstairs, and Louis's getting off stage. I'm half drunk at this point.
Oh, okay.
So I'm pretty buzzed, and I'm trying to be cool. I'm like trying to talk out of my pay range. And Louis gets off stage.
This is already not. This is dude, the recipe
I wish
for
you
disaster.
Could feel the I'm like starting to sweat in weird places. Louis gets off stage, and we're in the back hallway of the cellar. And I go, Louis, great set. And he goes, thanks, man. And I go, hey, the Village is working. And he goes, what? And I go, the Village is working. And as I say it, I'm losing confidence more and more each time. But I just keep, it's like the Robin Williams thing. I just keep saying, the Village is working. I go, the Village is working. And finally I see him go like,
what?
And I go, I don't know what that means. And he goes, yeah, I don't either. And then he just walks up the stairs and I go back and I'll never forget Joe List is standing out in front of the Comedy Village. And he goes like this and he sees me and he goes, is he coming by? And I go, I told him the Village is working. And Joe goes, what? He goes, we're in the Village.
Yeah.
Did you tell him it was the Comedy Village? And I was like, fuck. I didn't even like put that together. But I think about that every time I see Louis. And we're not close.
Yeah.
Anytime I see him.
I bet he sees you and thinks the Village
is working.
I bet
he doesn't even kind of remember it. But I know. Oh, you all right? But I know for a fact I remember that. I know for a fact every time I see him, I'm like, oh, the Village is working.
I don't know, dude. I think if a guy came up to me and just started spouting out the Village is working, I would remember that for a while.
And the decline in confidence of me saying it. Because I said at first, like, the Village is working. And he goes, what?
It almost sounds like you're a spy, and that's like your test to see if they're...
Yeah. The soup is hot.
The soup is hot. Oh, my Geiger counter's in the show.
He goes, what?
What?
Just having that, what?
The sun rises over the western moon.
I felt so fucking dumb. But that's awesome that you and Chris Robinson became friends.
Yeah.
And then now is it like, are you on a casual text? Because I'll say my friend that's the best at this is Shane Gillis.
Yeah.
Shane excels at, he's good at ball busting.
Yeah.
So what he does is kind of similar to what we said. When he becomes friends with the celebrity, he busts their balls.
Yeah.
And they immediately love it. Because everyone around him doesn't do that.
That's for sure. Like, you know, that's why he's tied with Kid Rock.
He's like, shut up. You stink.
Shut the fuck up. Although, I don't know if I want to talk, if we can talk about this on the podcast.
If not, we can always edit it.
Did Shane tell you about when Kid Rock FaceTimed him? About SNL?
No.
So I was at Bob's house.
Okay.
Kid Rock is what I call Bob. Yeah, Bob is who I call Kid Rock because it's hard to call a man Kid Rock.
You can't call him Kid Rock.
And nor will he introduce himself as Kid Rock.
I was hanging out at the Nashville Comedy Festival when you did the show.
Yeah.
He came into the green room and introduced himself as Bobby to everybody.
Bobby, I'm Bobby.
Yeah.
And so we're hanging out. We're drunk. He's drunk. I'm not really drunk. But he looks at me and goes, how do you think Shane did on SNL?
Yeah.
And I was like, I thought he did pretty good.
Yeah.
I go, the monologue was tough, but I go, it wasn't because of the jokes.
Yeah.
The jokes were great. It was just on a shit crowd.
Sure.
And then the band didn't help.
Yeah.
And he goes, I don't know. And I was like, I go, buddy, the skits were funny.
Skits were great.
They were very, they were very Shane.
Sketches were funny. He leaned right into
it.
He
leaned right into it. And he goes, and he fucking FaceTimed Shane Gillis.
Yeah.
And he goes, hey.
Well, you hear the
and he picks up and he goes, hey, how do you think you did on SNL?
Oh Bobby.
And Shane goes,
Bobby Booby.
Shane goes, I don't know. I thought I did pretty good. And he goes, I don't know. So I get in the frame. I'm behind Shane. I'm behind Bobby, like, yo, fuck this dude. Like, you did great. Don't listen to him. He's drunk. Then DeRosa hears my voice. He pops his head.
I love DeRosa's like, ah, Chris. He's like,
is that Porter? What the fuck? Like, what are you doing at Kid Rock? I'm like, we're buddies, but also fuck this dude.
Yeah, dude, that's wild.
And Shane ends up hanging up on Bobby.
Great.
Which was great. And then Bobby.
Good move, big dog.
Bobby woke up the next morning and he picks me up because, like, you stay at a guest house.
Sure.
And he.
There's property.
So he comes by, he grabs me, we're going down the studio, he goes, I feel bad about Shane. I go, yeah, you should. I go, you were fucking right out of line. We're not editing
this story out. This is good.
And he goes, I texted him this morning and told him I was out of line. Yeah. I was like, good for you, bro.
Yeah.
Good. But that's also. Because
when you're drunk, you do stuff. That's honestly, in a weird way, that's Kid Rock's The Village Is Working.
Yeah.
Because he thought he was saying something that was going to unlock a bunch of stuff. And really, it's the wrong key.
Yeah, it was the wrong key. And also, like, Shane's not the guy. Like, he busts balls.
Yeah.
But he's never going to tell you you suck.
He's also a person.
Yeah. And he's a great dude.
Yeah. He's a phenomenal dude.
He's not going to be the dude that's going to call Kid Rock and be like, your new album sucks a dick.
He's not going to call him and be like, hey, remember that Budweiser thing?
You're fucking stupid.
Yeah.
No, he's going to bust your balls about it. He'll rip
you, but he's not going to hurt you.
You're going to walk away going, Shane likes me. He ripped me pretty good, but he likes me.
That's exactly it.
You walk away from Bob sometimes and you're like, are we friends?
I think we're enemies.
Dude, we did this show. I do this side project with Zach Myers from Shinedown.
Yeah.
Where we do music and comedy together.
Oh, yeah. It's called Astronaut.
Campfire Astronauts.
Campfire Astronauts.
Although we're going to get rid of the name because, as Brian at Zany said, he's like, no, it does not explain what you're doing at all. It's
so just TBD.
TBD, but for now. But Bob comes out. He was at the first one. And the whole crux of the show is that some of it's not good.
Sure.
Because Zach is doing comedy, and that's not his job.
And you're singing.
And I'm singing, which is not my job. But it's, and he was like, yeah, the music suffers and the comedy suffers. And we're like, yeah, that's the point of the show.
Yeah.
And you're seeing someone out of their element. That's like the whole thing.
Man, friends giving you notes.
Yeah.
When they hurt.
And you're like, and he was like, well, it's not good. I'm like, well, it's not good yet. It's a work in progress. Like, we've literally done this 6 times.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like,
I've had that before where they're like, sometimes notes hurt on a level because you go like, well, yeah, I know the truth about that.
Yeah.
I'm a motor mouth. I just am a motor mouth. I get excited when we start being funny.
Yeah.
It's not good for a podcast like this because sometimes I'm going like, yeah. And then sometimes someone will go, let your guest talk. And I go like, one guy, he was trying to be completely polite. He was just having a bad day. And I read that comment and I'm like, well, I fucking, and you go like, you know what though? That's a note. Just take that note. Just
take a note. But
sometimes you don't need those notes from your friends.
No.
Because you get enough of them from other people.
Also, there's a way to do it.
Yeah.
You don't call me. And
everyone is a person.
And go, I don't know if you did so great.
You don't FaceTime Shane and go, how do you think you did?
Yeah. And then when he says I did pretty well, you go, I don't know.
Oh, dude. Oh, oof.
Yeah.
Ooh, the village is working.
The village is working, and it hurts.
Yeah, everyone needs a Joe List to go,
what the fuck?
What the fuck does that mean? Dude, having you come by means the world to me. I have been, not blowing smoke up your ass, I think you're one of the funniest human beings on the planet.
Oh, thanks, man.
Watching you do stand-up makes me feel like before I started comedy, I loved you on Last Comic Standing. I remember the joke about you quitting smoking and still drinking.
Oh, yeah.
You can't do that. You can't quit drinking. You can quit drinking and still smoke. You can't quit smoking, quit drinking. It's like trying to poop without peeing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's stuck in my head for 20 years. Every time I see you, I'm blown away. When I saw you at that Nashville show, every time I see one of your bits, I'm like, God, you had the perfect bit about the vaccine tracking us.
Oh, yeah.
And iPhones. It's just like, man, I think you're one of the best guys doing it. Check out Chris Porter any opportunity you can. He's one of the funniest human beings working.